You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 123, Titan AE, Space Snakes. Snakes. I don't know no snakes. They wanna try and build me up, so they can send me down. I wish that I could be back there.
The best way to start the podcast is thus. Anyway, welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers. This is episode 123, and holy cow, we have an awesome show for you today. My name is Mason. I will be your MC today because of the name tag here. Unfortunately, Morgan can't make it for this episode, and she left me in charge of the broadcast, and so I get my cool name on here and my Twitter handle on here. So everybody follow me on Twitter and Instagram and stuff like that. So anyway, thank you so much for joining. This is my lovely co-host, Chelsea Robson.
I am here but to enjoy the day.
Oh, man. So it's not every day the Rotoscopers get to review a Don Bluth animated film. And it's so today true. Is muy especial, super especial. So anyway, if you're new to the podcast, then welcome. If you're an old joining listener, part of the Roto Nation, if you will, then welcome back. You are among friends who love animation. In fact, you can see this show as basically just a bunch of friends gathering around on a couch or a commons area in a college dorm or some really hip cafe out in Paris or something, and just yakking it up about animation and what we love about animation. And we typically do one animated film per episode. Today's episode is on Titan AE, the 2000 animated classic by Don Bluth and Gary Goldman.
This is actually the second time I've watched this movie.
Okay, cool.
The first time I watched it was a couple of years ago when I first moved to Nashville. I was actually remembering this because Mason always kept talking about this. Oh my gosh, Titan AE. Oh my gosh. And I felt really stupid that this of all the movies was like one that I hadn't seen. I was like, I need to see this movie. And so it was on Netflix at the time. And I remember seeing, oh, this is only going to be on Netflix for like 3 more days. I'm like, I must watch it. So that's my story of how I watched. It was a good story.
Okay, I just made a huge mistake. I can't hear the music that I played at the beginning. I actually played Over My Head instead of The End Is Over by Powerman 5000. Not that anyone cares about how accurate we are to the soundtrack to this film. Because these are basically the artists that you put away the CDs after, the mid to, you know, after like 2005, you pretty much got ashamed of this album and put it away. But anyway, we'll play a little Powerman 5000 at the end if anybody is still staying, still tuned in. But that was, I'm in over my head. You know, it's an awesome movie when Creed does a track on your album.
Yeah.
For the film.
Creed to do a track on my film.
You have a film?
I could have a film.
Well, what would your film be about? Because there's the great Mason animation conspiracy, the great Rotoscopers conspiracy, where basically what we're actually trying to do is infiltrate the animation industry so that I will direct an animated film, Morgan will be the model for one of the characters, and Chelsea will do the soundtrack.
Right. So eventually I'll get Creed to join on for this fantastic show that we're going to be doing.
Yeah. I think at one point Lady Gaga was supposed to voice the character that Morgan was modeled after, but I think she's done with Lady Gaga. So it might be someone else now. So
no, she's not done with Lady Gaga. She's just,
Just taking a break. They're just taking a break. Anyway, on to the actual animated film that we are reviewing. So, like I said, we're doing Titan AE, aka Planet Ice. That was like a working title for it.
Really?
Yeah, Planet Ice.
Oh my goodness.
Well, it's just an indicator of the long production woes that this film underwent in its in its production. We call it production hell in the industry, as I'm sure much of you know. So anyway, let's get into this. The ill-fated studio that took on this project was 20th Century Fox, specifically Fox Animation. And we'll get into that in a little bit. Directors, of course, are Don and Gary themselves, the rock stars of animation. And very, very early, early story treatment by none other than Joss Whedon. Sorry, I always forget his name, but who's done quite a few like cool sci-fi cool sci-fi films and stuff. The release date was the beautiful year of 2000, 16th of June in the U.S. And here's the sad part. On a budget of $75 million, the film only grossed $36.8 million in the box office. 20th Century Fox took a huge hit with this one. And this is widely regarded as a cult classic because it does have a very enthusiastic fan base, but it was not a commercial success at all. Doesn't mean he couldn't like it, but it's just, man, so much crap happened with this.
Yeah. It's true. I really enjoyed this movie. I thought they took a lot of risks and being that it is Don and Gary, I don't think that they thought they were taking very many risks. They just thought that they were doing their thing. And really, they are doing their thing.
It's always this big debate. Like, when a film doesn't do so well, who's to blame, you know, or whose fault is it? Was it the studio executives that did it, or was it Don and Gary? Did they, you know, somehow stay off of their usual Don and Gary course, or did their formula just not work? And if you'll permit me to share a little bit of history on the kind of the studio climate that was surrounding Titan AE, that I think it'll help illuminate that. Like I said, 20th Century Fox, they took a huge hit on this one. Oof. Like, lots of problems, lots of setbacks, production hell for quite a long time. You can hear in a certain Don Bluth interview at like a convention that's on YouTube that basically Fox like threatened to fire animators who wouldn't agree to work on Titan AE, which is weird. Like, that's like, I don't know, there's got to be some sort of corporate ethics thing that's wrong with that. But basically, I'm guessing that their animation branch wasn't doing very well. This was like their last ditch effort to save it or something like that, which doesn't make any sense because Anastasia did so well. So anyway, but the you know, the sources are there that this is what happened. They had absolutely no scripts for Fox Animation to work on, and so that put them behind. Super short production pipeline. You know how Zootopia took like 5 years to make? They gave them 19 months to make this one. And in the middle of production, there were huge layoffs, which led to outsourcing a lot of the animation, whether that's the CG stuff or the hand-drawn stuff, I can't say. But as of the filming of the making of featurette that I watched recently, there were about 26 animators working on it, which, when they say animators, were they actual rough animators and cleanup artists and stuff, or were they just people on the animation crew, you know, like lighting technicians and cel shader people and programmers and stuff? So who knows? Maybe if we ever get the chance, we will talk to Don and Gary about it. Be like, "Hey guys, what do you think about Titan AE? Wasn't that your animated film that sucked?
That was the best one ever." We kind of did talk to him about it, not in huge depth, but we did talk to him a little bit about it when we had that phone interview. You were on the phone, and Morgan and I were in.
Oh, was it for the Dragon's Lair movie?
Yeah, for Dragon's Lair. And so you can definitely check out the link for that. I'll put that in the show notes as well. But he does go in and he talks about how Mason asked the question about, I think it was about Titan AE specifically, and he was just like, you know.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
I had my own problems with that. Did I ever mention that to you, Gary? And like Gary says, yes, always.
Oh, so it was one of those things.
It was one of those moments where like there were just some things that he was like, I felt like there was a lot of, it was a little too much CGI versus yeah. the hand-drawn. And so it kind of left you in that uncanny valley area, but
it's some kind of valley, not exactly uncanny, but it's more like the valley of the shadow of death. Yeah. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that.
Yeah. So he has talked about it, and he's one thing I love about Don Bluth now is that he is owned by no man. And so he goes and he'll talk about whatever, and he'll just like say it as it is, like his commentary on Anastasia, you know, at the very end of Anastasia, when it's like, everything's just kind of like falling apart, and the main villain? He like Rasputin, and he's like, blah, like crumbling together. And he was just like, yeah, do you know why we did that? We ran out of money. We didn't know what to do, and so we just had him crumble. I love you, Don.
I would say that $75 million was pretty hefty for this film. I don't know. I'm not a budget or finance guy, but 19 months to finish this, and he didn't even have a script at the beginning. Like, I would say they achieved a lot, but that doesn't mean that what they achieved worked. Anyway, here's some good parts. Okay, the best thing about this film is the ice field sequence.
That was fun.
Am I right? That CG still holds up today, IMO. And it's just such a cool, I guess, technical way to solve a problem with like having this like suspenseful chase scene to have like these mirrors and have these reflections and like, you know, tricking your opponents and stuff. And I think considering the technical limitations, and I don't even want to know about the rendering time for that sequence, but just all the effects and stuff and particle simulation, like that's a huge achievement, I think. And, you know, the Dredge, they certainly look really old with the CG. Something's going on with their frames per second to where they just look way too CG. And there's a lot of other parts that don't work. And let me explain to y'all why that is. Okay. Do y'all remember Iron Giant? Iron Giant.
Yes.
I'll remember Iron Giant. Of course you remember Iron Giant. So vintage rotoscopers. It was like eons ago. I didn't have my luscious hiccup hair. So anyway, let me turn into Emo Mason real quick. Yeah. I'm in over my head. Over my head. Okay. So what? Sorry, I'm playing with my hair on the podcast. Okay. So the Iron Giant, the character, he was CG. Y'all knew that, right? But the way they made him fit in the world was they actually cell shaded him, or that his textures were kind of a toon shader, what we would call in Mayaville, in something that's meant to look 2D, but it's applied to a 3D surface. And then they did all sorts of cool edge detection techniques where they kind of got the blurriness of the hand-drawn lines so that it looked like he was hand-drawn. The CG in Titan AE does not match the surfacing and the colors and the cell shading of the characters. It looks more photoreal. Like you look at a ship and it's got this cool metal plating and rust and space grime. You know, everybody gets space grime on their spaceship once in a while. No shame in that. You know, and the planets all have this amazing, you know, swirly, twirly crumb drops. These amazing textures and you know, the Dredge look all cool. They're beings made of pure energy, but that doesn't match what the characters look like. The characters were cell shaded in a computer program. And so it just doesn't match. These are characters that look like they like maybe acting wise, they belong in the universe, but visually there's a huge disconnect. And then you've got all sorts of limitation, all sorts of problems and technical challenges that happen when you're doing like pretty much half, like three quarters of the way rotoscoped human animation, you know, on these like jet ski things that they were bumping up and down, and they had markers on and they animated to match to that. And then like the spacesuits are CG, but you've got a hand-drawn head inside of it. So all sorts of technical challenges, and you got to hand it to them for taking on that challenge. But does that mean that they excelled at it? And like Esther on the chat is saying, Iron Giant still looks fine, but parts of Titan AE appear outdated. That's because in the Iron Giant, they technically matched the CG characters very masterfully with the hand-drawn, hand-painted ones. Drop the mic.
I'm so glad we have somebody as smart as you on the podcast, Mason. Just, it brings so much validity to
I was magna cum laude, so. But anyway, that doesn't mean jack in my industry. But just to let you kids know, you know, grades are very important, but they're not everything. You got to actually know how to animate. But anyway, so that's pretty much it. Like, there were, like, technical achievements. Yeah, there are many. There's some beautiful environments, like that kind of flooded planet with those big lantern things. That always gave me like a Star Wars Episode One vibe for some reason. I'm thinking Major Gungan City there. And then, but the ice planet, you know, which the film had its working title from, it's pretty brilliant. Of course, you had some of the workers who actually worked on the Phantom Menace, who are actually working on this film. And so it's all coming together.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's my technical rant, and I'm sure many technical rants will crop up as the episode progresses. But how about that soundtrack, huh?
Soundtrack was really well done. And
can
the
we,
great
can
thing
we cue
about-
some can we cue some Pirate Power Man 5000 on Please here? Do. Let's see. Please do. Power Man 5000, man. I love it, too. Wait till it kicks in. But anyway, I was such a nerd. I loved Power Man 5000 when I was around the time I saw this. So I was like, my best buddy Joey and I were like super into like sci-fi and stuff like that. And he couldn't believe that I hadn't seen this movie. He's like, dude, you got to see Titan AE. It's like awesome. Like, the Earth explodes, and that's just the beginning of the movie. And there's these aliens made of pure energy, and Power Man 5000 does the soundtrack. And I'm like, Power Man 5000? Power Man 5000? I was really into that stuff, and as a kid, and I don't know, I just love the soundtrack. It's got so much like of this like early 2000 like angsty alternative metal going on, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what's funny about this one is it's just so different from what most Don Bluth films had. I mean, his last one that he did right before this was Anastasia. All hail Anastasia. But it's
the greatest Disney princess ever.
She is the greatest Disney princess ever.
We're trolling, everyone. We're trolling. We know.
So, but I just feel like, you know, you look at most of the songs that he does, and most of the movies that he does have some type of a musical vibe to them. He loves musicals, and so why not? But I think that they did a wise choice as far as this type of film, not turning it into a musical, because it's just so not a musical. And I'm not really sure. Well, I'm very doubtful that our good friend Matt Damon would have been able to pull it off as well.
Aww. If only he did some of the
awesome.
If only he did some of the singing parts in Stallion of the Cinnamon. Then, anyway, yeah, this film would definitely not make a good musical. If you want to get into like sci-fi literature and stuff, this is what you would call a cyberpunk dystopian space opera. Kind of like if you ever read any of the short stories by like Philip K. Dick, or watched movies like Blade Runner. This is definitely that kind of future. There is nothing glamorous. There is nothing shiny and chrome. There's nothing that you would see in an Apple store about this film. Like, everything is very industrial and utilitarian, because the future in space is about industry. It is about cleaning up space and letting other alien races push you around, because humans are refugees in this film. What an awesome and mature premise for a sci-fi film. Spoiler alert, Earth gets blown up in the first 5 minutes of this film. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
For no reason. The Dredge just show up and are like, hey guys, we're going to blow up your planet. See ya.
Destroy the humans.
Did they give a reason at the beginning? I felt like they did, but I wasn't really engaged enough to notice.
This is why I love the Dredge. They're just jerks. You know, a lot of modern movie making is all about, well, the bad guys aren't really that. They're not really pure evil. They have a reason to fight against the protagonist. That, you know, they were hurt at some point, or they were offended at some point, and that gives them the right to blow up planet Earth. No, the Dredge just show up and they're like, we don't like what you're building, so we're going to blow up your planet.
Well, they're like, toward the end, it's like, oh, they were just afraid. They weren't afraid of who we were. They were afraid of what we would become.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
I guess. I still think they're just kind of jerks.
Well, yeah. Anyway. Obviously. I mean, who made them like the galaxy's bully? I don't know, but it is what it is.
I don't know, man. I don't know. But anyway, awesome effects. You know, the exploding planet Earth at the beginning was an effect where they, you know, the Earth breaks up into tiny different bits, and it's actually cut up into pieces according to seismic fault data. So there's the actual pieces are like, if the planet did explode along its fault lines, that's what it would look like. I thought that was kind of cool.
That is cool. Somebody really put that time and effort into that. There was that moment when it's like the world is spinning and you're like, oh, poor Florida. I just see it like just get totally,
yep,
totally demolished.
The Disney parks are obliterated. I wonder if that's a little stab. You know how in the Minions movie they referenced Orlando.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's cool. Earth gets destroyed, and we're introduced to, what's his name? Kale?
Yeah, Kale is the...
Kale. What an unfortunate and unappetizing name. Who likes Kale?
I like Kale.
Oh, get out of here. So anyway, young Kale watches his planet get blown up, and his father leaves with... Or his father... shoots off the Titan, which is Earth's only hope, but we don't really know how the Titan was supposed to be Earth's only hope until later. Little cameo by Ron Perlman, who's I guess his alien buddy, who's like, oh, come on, get out of there, you know. Ron Perlman is always a treat to have in a sci-fi film.
They had a really good cast, I thought. I mean,
such a cool cast.
In general, I was looking at, I was like, okay, Matt Damon on this, I can dig that.
Matt Damon, yeah.
Bill Pullman, he's definitely the best American president in film ever. And everyone will say that.
I didn't even know. Yeah, he is. We will not go quietly into the night.
We will not finish
without a fight.
We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Today, we celebrate our Independence Day.
Doesn't that just make you feel for America? All you people who are not from the U.S. listening right now, like, doesn't that speech just want you to go out there and jump in a fighter plane and kill the aliens?
Yes.
But there's no such inspiration coming from Bill Pullman's character.
No.
And then we've got Drew Barrymore, who is Akima. You know, she's the tough and empowered female star pilot. Don Bluth told her when she was doing her acting, he was like, well, you know, Drew Barrymore, she's always the sweet and slightly sexy girl character. And I told her, don't do sweet, sexy, sweet, do tough, you know. So Drew Barrymore in an interview said that, you know, boys will like the action, girls will feel empowered. That's good. That's a good way to roll up this film in a nutshell, you know.
There you go.
And then we've got Nathan Lane, who is Preed. He's this alien who's kind of like Jar Jar Binks' cooler older cousin.
Who is?
If he had the floppy ears, he would be a perfect like tough Gungan.
It's true. One thing I liked, he was the one that he was the double backstabber. You know, he backstabs the backstabbed.
He stabs a lot of backs, and it's the most un Nathan Lane. Role
like I can
ever
recognize that it was him after I
he's
realized
like a creepy
it.
Smooth highly intelligent Nathan Lane and I'm just used to the panicky sassy Nathan Lane. Maybe I watch too much Modern Family. And then my man John Leguizamo as Goon, channeling a little Peter Lorre as this alien. It's so sad. What do you think he died from? He died and then he comes back, is like, I woke from my nap, you know. Blows all the aliens away.
He was a very, I liked him. as far as character design, as far as characters were just appeal, I thought he was an appealing character.
Yeah. And then everyone's favorite rapping Goanna, Tone Lock, is in it at one point doing the wild thing. What is he in this movie? I just know he's in it.
Who?
Tone Lock.
Oh, I don't know.
You know, the guy who did Funky Cold Medina. He was that sassy Goanna in Fern Gully.
Yes.
Tech. Who is Tech?
I don't know.
He's like some alien. Yeah, he's like some alien in it. But yeah, Jim Cummings is in it too. So like a really cool cast. And then who was the kangaroo alien? I feel like I know her from somewhere.
Yeah.
Look her up real quick.
Look that up.
Yeah. How does this movie have a 48 on Metascore? Come on. let's see. Stith. That's right. Stith is like this kangaroo alien. She was, this is Janine Garofalo, and she was in Ratatouille. Who was she in Ratatouille? Yeah, she was Colette. So she was Colette in Ratatouille. And that just speaks to how versatile this voice actress is, because Stith is like, she's like the very, very angry, like very tough space pirate kangaroo lady. You know, when she's blowing away aliens, she's like, woo, yeah, do this all day.
Yeah, even when Kale comes over and you're like, no, it's Kale. She's like, meh, at least he got away. You know, she's like, I'm already halfway through. Go. Like those people who get like really into their video games and they're like, I can't stop now. Like they get off the video game and they're still playing in their mind.
That's me playing Smash Brothers. I get very nasty, very angry. I'm like Seth Cohen on the OC playing video games. I start taunting. But anyway, yeah, so really cool voice cast. And you know what? I do have visual confirmation that they all did their voices. Like they did do voice sessions together. Maybe not everyone, but I know for a fact that that Bill Pullman, Drew Barrymore, and Matt Damon did voices together in the same room, which is always a huge deal. I've heard of nightmare scenarios where the producers do the animation first and then expect the voice actors and or actresses to voice over that. And it's torture for those poor people. So yeah, making it kind of loose and having kind of a, because there is a lot of human, like interhuman conflict and strife and interaction and dialogue and stuff. Like it's not just about the action. And so I liked that. I really like the voice acting. I think they have a very natural flow versus other animated films, you know?
Yeah. And Don always likes doing that because he's an actor's actor, director. Because he does plays and he's always been interested in theater and just how, like, for example, if you do anything that is live theater, it's an entirely different momentum. It's an entirely different vibe that you're going to get when you're all in the same room, as opposed to when you're just standing in front of a microphone in this dark little room that you're trying to like create in your mind, which, I mean, great. There's people who are able to do that fantastically and more power to them, but to have just that, every voice actor around is like, I would much rather play off of somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of things that Don Bluth likes to do in his films, I wouldn't exactly call this a kid-friendly movie. I would almost do PG-13, since I'm a God-fearing man. If I let my kids watch this show, I think it would be after, like, when they're 13. Just because it's kind of a rough film overall. Like, it is dark and gritty, just like most Don Bluth films. Mm-hmm. But there's some inappropriate stuff in it, too, that I'm like, how did this get into the... Isn't there like a part where like Akima's like pretty much naked in a towel or something?
Yeah, and then she's like, are you in or out? And it's like, okay.
Yikes.
I guess I'm in.
Yeah, I guess this is, don't blow it, man. But yeah, that was very much a Starship Troopers moment where I guess like in the future, no one cares about decency, like, you know, bathroom issues, I guess. I hate to bring that up now, but but just suffice it to say, like, this is kind of one of those rougher animated films. Yeah, it was PG. Like, check out the parents' guide before letting your 8-year-old kid watch this. They probably won't even care.
Well, then there's the one part where she's doctoring him up and he's like, why am I naked?
Hello.
Like, yeah. I'm still naked. Like, which is like, that is the moment when parents are gonna be like, Should I have brought my 8-year-old to this? I don't, my 6 and 7-year-olds.
I don't know if an 8-year-old would have cared. He's like, what? I'm naked all the time. But anyway, but you know, you question whether this is really an appropriate kids film. You know what? It's an appropriate Don Bluth kids film. So
yeah,
when you go into one of his films, you just have to kind of get over it. But anyway, I think overall, like, they just go from space opera situation to space opera situation, always being chased down by the dredge, you know, and then there's, you know, there's some beautiful environments because they're trying to get to this map. You know, this is very Treasure Planet. The main character alone holds the key to this epic map that has, you know, the amazing thing. I like, you know, my map is hidden inside my Aggie ring here. Read it and weep, everyone. But the ring has it. So remind me again why the bad guy just couldn't kill Kale and take the ring for himself. Was it like hooked up to his DNA?
Yeah, so it would only show on his hand because it was connected to the, like, it's like if you watch Once Upon a Time, it's family magic or blood magic.
Blood magic.
It's blood magic.
We love blood magic. We love blood magic.
Where only somebody who is in that same, like, bloodline can break the spell.
Dude, that is so Pirates of the Caribbean.
It is.
William Turner was my father. His blood flows through my veins.
Yes.
He's only half Turner. We spill it all. But anyway, really cool scenes, like everything from the crappy space station where Kale works at and gets picked up to the lantern planet, to the ice planet, you know, to the very end, like really cool stuff. And then you got these dredge, which are like these really sinister characters. And they gave me a real independent vibe from Independence Day. Maybe their animation or just how they kind of matted their animation with the backgrounds and stuff. But I don't know. I just feel like everything in this film is just very dirty, very grungy. And the CG backgrounds, like, maybe don't work. Maybe they should have just gone with, like, what do you call it? What's that pan thing, that camera pan technology that Disney made for Beauty and the Beast? Not deep canvas. What's it called? Where you have, like, you have these panes, multi-pane camera.
Oh, yeah. I was like, wait, what? Yeah.
Should have just gone with multi-pane camera.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
Can't y'all just steal Disney's technology and use it for your film, guys? Come on. Come on, I can't believe you.
You know, though, I was really glad that there was a sufficient amount of Don Bluth dazzle in this.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, is he declaring an emergency? There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Oh, yeah. So much dazzle. CG dazzle, even.
Yeah. Like in the very beginning where you have young Kale and he's like over by the river and you've got the shadow on top of him, which is a little bit distracting because you're like, I see what you're trying to do there.
Yeah, those CG shadows, man.
And it was 2000. But at the same time, it's like, you did it. I like it. So...
yeah. Okay, so what were your highlights of this film, Chels?
My highlights of the film, I liked the color scheme. I always liked Don Bluth's color.
Really?
He loves putting the really deep reds in there.
I've been
very much of a fan of the deep dark reds and all those. And then
it's like Kodachrome.
Yeah. And then it like counters out with like some greens and blues and just really dark. I like those things. As far as plot points, I enjoyed the characters themselves and the fact that it was more of a serious film. I mean, it was more of a serious tone. It was more of a serious everything. So
yeah, I think that's a great point. I think one of the biggest differences is that, between this and Treasure Planet is that Treasure Planet tried really hard to inject the lovable sidekicks into this film. Titan A.E. made zero attempts to inject lovable sidekicks into this film. I personally don't think anyone is lovable in this film.
No.
That doesn't mean they're not lovable. That doesn't mean they're not interesting. That doesn't mean they're not appealing. But it's like kind of like Rango, where every character is ugly in it. And that's pretty much it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I love the chase sequence in the flooded planet with the lanterns. The ice sequence was really cool. And then that beautiful animated sequence with where basically it's the power to create a new world that's in the Titan. The Titan has everything you need to create Earth. It's like a modern day Noah's Ark. It's got DNA from all the animals. It's got all this terraforming technology.
Yeah.
And I wonder why they didn't just find another planet that resembles Earth and terraform it, if they've already got the technology to create an Earth from scratch. But anyway.
There was a lot of questions that I had about the whole like creating the Earth thing. One question was like, where did they get the sun? Like, weren't we in this like ice?
No, they created a grow your own sun kit. Just add water.
Like there was no sun up until this. Like it was a full-fledged like ice portion of the galaxy and dark and yeah. So I was like, where did they get the sun? That's all I care about. How do they make it like revolve around the sun? Are they just gonna do this like we just revolve around ourselves because that's we're cool like that?
I don't know. Maybe while the Titan was working on the ice planet and converting it to Earth, it like steered it towards the nearest sun. I don't know. One can only wonder. But I don't think there's a whole lot of scientific debate revolving around this film. Like, it's not like Inception or Gravity or something like that. Well, Gravity's pretty easy. It's just the laws of gravity.
Right.
But
I hate space in general. I hate space movies. Yes.
Space. It's so beautiful.
Like, when they're in, like, it was kind of during the beginning of it and they were eating their food and then, like, the gravity machine turns off and everyone just starts floating around. I'm like, oh, that's just so inconsistent.
Gravity would be great.
I want gravity. I want to be anchored in somehow.
Okay, in order to have gravity then, Chelsea, you need to have a spinning space station like on Space Odyssey, 2001 A Space Odyssey, that makes a centrifugal force that resembles gravity. You can't have it both ways. You can't just press a button and turn gravity. But you know how I feel about space in the words of Markiplier? Oh, it's so cool. So cool, space. He did someone did like a mashed up dub of him singing about space. But anyway, yeah, so space is cool, but it's terrifying, you know, all that like floating off into space and like getting latched off to your spacecraft. Like there's none of that. Everybody pretty much has rocket packs on their spacesuits and stuff.
Mm-hmm. How did you feel about the reveal of
that one fool? What's his name? IMDb is saving my life tonight. I didn't see it coming because I was like a 13-year-old kid when I saw the film. I didn't know nothing. A Corso, yeah. I think it's interesting because it's kind of like, it's an opposite of what they did with Treasure Planet. Again, so many comparisons and contrasts. Whereas Long John Cyber, he was a vile and repulsive character who later became good. So good that they commemorated his visage in the stars at the end of the film.
Sky.
They might as well have had him winking to the audience at the end. The man in the moon.
I totally thought they did.
There was a twinkle in his eye, I'm pretty sure.
Oh my God.
I'm pretty sure there's a twinkle in his star eye. But anyway, so this Corso was like the mentor character that takes the young rebel under his wing. He's kind of like, what if Obi-Wan turned evil at the end of Star Wars and betrayed Luke Skywalker?
Yeah,
that's
he also knew his father. You knew my father.
You fought in the Clone Wars with my father.
Yeah, it was just you knew my dad, and I feel like you're trying to take me under your wing and trying to be a father figure, and then to throw it all out. I'm like,
it's all business.
I'm actually going to kill you.
Like, it's all space business. But then at the end, he's like, oh, I see the error of my ways and that I could possibly die. So I might as well repent.
Yeah. And this is one of those things that bother me. When you have a character like that, or even just in real life, when you have a person that they're like, oh, they come back and it's like, yes, you can be forgiven, but I have not forgotten. I just feel like, have you ever heard that story where it's like the kid picks up the snake, or and he's He's like, the snake says, oh, carry me across the river. Oh, but yeah. If you bite me, I'll die. Like, I won't bite you. That's not what I do. And he picks him up, carries him across the river. And then the moment he's about to set him down, he turns around and bites him. It's like, well, you knew I was a snake when you picked me up. Like, that's what I am. So that's kind of how I see this guy, like, at the end. Like, why would you trust him in the end? I mean, yes, it's understandable. You need somebody. You're kind of like at that point where you're alone.
Yeah. Maybe it's just a space pirate code. If someone says they're sorry, you have to instantly forgive them. That's not like pirate. Yes, that's very piratey. But anyway, that's a pretty good metaphor. So the title of this episode should be Space Snakes. I think. Snakes? I don't know. No snakes. Anyway, I thought that was a pretty cool. And then he like comes back. What was weird is that he like pretty graphically killed Preed in front of everyone. And that's pretty bad. You don't just kill Nathan Lane. I always love a good bad character who turns good and redeems himself. Like I'm always up for that. And then the Dredge get destroyed. Actually, they get converted into the energy that powers the Titan. Like, that's so smart.
I like that.
Isn't that just so animated film where it's like the main character cannot use brute strength to kill his enemy. Mm-hmm. And so he finds some sneaky way to do it. Like, this is basically Space Aladdin, where the Dredge are Jafar in his final genie form. That wasn't even his final form. And he's like, oh, well, since y'all are energy, then here, take all the energy and be sucked in. That's not really how it went, but
yeah.
Basically, there's going to be a sequel where someone releases all the Dredge out of the Titan. I'm free! And that guy from Seinfeld is going to be their new master. But anyway, the planet rebirth sequence was actually animated by none other than Blue Sky when they were, they were doing their commercial stuff, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Blue Sky in that era specifically, just because I love seeing smaller companies like that have such a growth. Like, you feel like, okay, you started out so here, and then you just step by step by step by step, and then you're like, one of the major, I mean, there for a time there specifically, they're one of the major players in the CGI world. So kudos.
Well, a lot of them, yeah, everybody forgets that Blue Sky was pretty much there from the beginning as far as animated film production, like CG animated film production. Like, Ice Age still holds up, man. Did we do Ice Age? Yeah, we did. Okay, we got to do Ice Age 2 because that one's even funnier than the first one. Number 3, not so much. Yeah, number 3, not so much. Number 4 and number 5, please stop. And then Collision Course, is Collision Course the fifth one or is it the sixth one? I've lost count. I shouldn't hate on Blue Sky because I really respect them, but man, they're milking the wrong cash cow. Push peanuts. Peanuts in Rio, guys. Anyway, I like all these kind of studios that start out doing like contract commercial work. You know, Real Effects did the same thing. Yeah. There's another company in Texas that's called, are they in Texas? Brazen Animation. Anyway, they're about to start doing feature films. I'm pretty sure. Nice. I love all this. I love all that stuff. But anyway, so that was Blue Sky Studios.
How did you feel about her kinship with like the human race as opposed to his?
What do you mean?
So for like, she just has gadgets and gizmos aplenty. I mean, you look in her, she's got baseball.
Space who's it's and space what's it's galore. That's
true. And he's just
you
so-
mean Akima?
Akima, yeah. And then Kale's just so, not so much against it, but he's just never been around it. He's always just been with the other aliens. So I thought
here's
that
the
was
deal.
Kind of cool.
Here's the deal. Kale has forgotten what it means to be human. That's it. And Akima retains her humanity in her own way. You know, that's all her gadgets and gizmos aplenty. You know, she's got Preed explaining all the things. It's like a hairdryer, you know. No, he gets a curling iron and says, this used to be a fork back when Earth stood. Just kidding. That would have been a great reference.
That would have been fantastic. It really would have been.
Yeah. Oh. So anyway, Kale has forgotten what it means to be human. And what's really interesting about the ending of this film is that Kale reconnects with what it means to be human, and that's like courage and responsibility and love and hope. But also there's like this strangely spiritual part to it. If you know anything about Don Bluth's religious beliefs, one of his big beliefs is that one of the greatest powers given to us is to create life. And y'all know what that means, but I won't say because there's preschool toys here. In a way, the Titan and the Titan's life-creating ability being unlocked by Kale because he is a human and he has human blood in him kind of represents that. And so from a weird kind of spiritual, like what is the purpose of life viewpoints, like it is kind of spiritual. And so Don Bluth does it again with his pro family views. Are you following me on this, Chelsea, or are you just completely lost?
No, I'm kind of following you there for sure. I also saw, I guess I didn't focus on that as much. One thing that I did focus on, and we did touch on it slightly, but it was the fact that they used the Dredge's energy as their major force of something to propel them forward.
And yeah.
I focused on a lot. I was like, how many times our biggest trials in life are actually our biggest opportunities.
Huh. You know,
without the Dredge coming to kill them, they would never have been able to start the Earth again. They would never have been able to move forward. And so those biggest trials are our biggest opportunities. So that was what I got. And
well,
so
that's
I was
a pretty
thinking
good
thing. Mostly on that. So I guess that's why I wasn't thinking on the creation part.
Also, they do get the energy to start the Titan from the Dredge, which are like these beings of pure energy. So I don't know, maybe there's like a metaphor for like, this is like the new era of humanity where we use Dredge energy now. Need some energy? Have a Dredge cola. It's amazing.
We no longer work on screams. It's all about the laughs.
Right. And oh, that's right. That's right. Like on, what's that ride called? The Monsters Laugh Factory or something like that?
Yeah, I think so.
Something like that where, in the parks. Now if you want to talk about cool animation, that's pretty cool. Like it's a pretty simple algorithm, but I like what they're doing on it. Uh-huh. But I like how, it's not screams anymore. It's laughs that are like our form of energy. I don't know if that's canon, I don't know if that goes by the lore, but still really cool. Our comedian monster kept pointing out this one guy in the audience who didn't speak any English because he was from another country. And it was just like really awkward. It's like, we know, he's from China, dude. Quit yelling. Quit laughing at it.
Said that they were from new something or other.
Shanghai, New Bangkok. Yeah,
it was New Bangkok.
One night in New Bangkok makes the hard man humble. Not much between despair and ecstasy. That's a good song. But Space Bangkok is even cooler.
Space Bangkok.
One town, Oriental City, but the city I don't know. Sorry, that's a really funny song from the 80s. Anyway, Bangkok. Yeah, there's always a new Bangkok, new Tokyo, new Buenos Aires, new whatever.
Yeah. Well, there's also the Phoenix. So
The Phoenix.
We do know that there was
that's a metaphor. It's a symbol for Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix.
They're looking really far out there. they were ahead of their time. But the Phoenix, it's the mythical bird that rises from the ashes. So, it's in a way it's this human race is going to rise from extinction, or almost extinction. But also the film was made in Arizona. So I thought that was a cool out there.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So anyway, it's all about Kale learning how to be a human again. Human again. And we're human again.
I hate that song so much.
I hate it too. Which one do you hate more? The Morning Report or Human Again?
Both of them. They were cut for a reason. They were cut for a reason, people.
The Morning Report. Thank you. Thank you.
Human Again. There are several songs from the Broadway versions that I'm like, hey, I liked that one. Home, for one, is one of my favorites. Mason has yet to do his interpretation of Home from Beauty and the Beast.
Papa will be something. Oh my gosh. I don't think when did we do that? Was that at Rotoroma?
Rotoroma.
It was at Rotoroma. That was, I don't remember laughing so hard ever on this podcast when we did that.
We need to do it again.
I think it was because we had all gotten up really early and we were all like on energy drinks. And we were just like, but anyway, if you had to choose one, which do you hate most? Morning Report or Human Again?
Oh, jeez. I had like, which one would I least? I guess human again.
Okay. Just because it's longer.
Yeah. And it's like you, the characters are off model and you just go in and you're like, you weren't in my, no, I just don't like it. And there's just so many people that are, they just, I felt like they forced it on you. They yeah. forced it on you. And both of them they do. But that one I'm going to say.
If it's anything I hate, it's being something being forced on me during an animated film.
Exactly.
Anyway, hey, let's do a chat / Twitter question. Well, let's just do a chat question. So, if you're listening on the chat, we're gonna wrap up kind of soon. But have this in your mind and let us know in the chat. Who is your favorite character from Titan AE? And let us know in the chat. So, let's discuss something here, Chelsea. So why is it that Titan AE did so bad in the box office? If you look on the IMDb message boards for this film, which is kind of one of my go-to resources, like 9 out of 10 of the discussion board threads are titled like, why is this rated so badly? I don't understand why people don't like it. I can't believe how low rating this has. I wish more people liked this movie. What the crap? Why doesn't anyone like this movie? Like, it has a cult following that are like, what? Come on, this isn't that bad. And yet it's got such a low, like, Metascore rating. It's very, it's not very popular. Like, it's got an okay rating on IMDb, but those are user ratings, not critics ratings. Right. You got to kind of take both. But anyway.
I think the reason why is because they didn't really know their audience. And I think that was a big part of this one. So people going into it, for one thing, they're thinking that they're going to get, you know, it's a Don Bluth film. The last one was Anastasia. And so they kind of, they expect that. But this one was taken a little bit further than, you know, as far as darkness goes. And they don't even think Don Bluth, really. Most people don't. But they just think animated, therefore kids. But then
therefore kids.
Therefore kids. Then you go into it and it doesn't hit the same beats that all of the other animated films hit. And so it, because of that, and I hate saying that, saying that therefore it's going to fail, because I don't think that that's true, nor do I want it to be true at all. But it's, I think that that was the main thing, is they didn't really gear it toward anyone specific.
Yeah, it's really weird.
And so it was just like, I don't know who your audience is.
When I look at this film, just from the previews or just from the trailer, it looks like a boy movie. You know, don't want to generalize too much, but it's got the action, it's got the explosions, it's got aliens, it's got laser guns, it's got aliens. Did I mention aliens? So they probably had a hard time roping in families just from the like the teaser trailers and stuff, and like the previews. Like, despite the film having a very strong statement about the integration of male and female gender roles, like the men and women, they work on the same spaceship and they're equally as empowered and confident and you know, able. And yet it's still kind of a boys movie, because you've got Creed and Power Man 5000 doing your music, and all the explosions and the color. Which brings me to one of my big points for maybe why this film didn't do so well in the box office, is because everything is so dismal. Like, the film is so depressing. This is very much a dystopian future.
Yeah.
Like I said, very Blade Runner, very Philip K. Dick, you know.
It doesn't leave you with the feeling of euphoria, for sure. Which...
Right. And I don't know if that's even Don Bluth's style, you know, but, you know, I don't know. It's just so hard. I, for one, think the colors in the film are dull and like dismal. Sorry. There's some vibrant, those vibrant reds are definitely there. It is a very warm colored film, like a lot of Don Bluth stuff. But they just work so hard to make the grunge of like this cyberpunk dystopian world work. Whereas you contrast that with Treasure Planet, and look how sparkly and vibrant and colorful everything was, you know? It had a little dose of sunshine. And the characters match it. The characters are interesting, maybe even appealing, but they're not likable, and they are kind of jerks to each other throughout the film.
Yeah.
And I know that this fits in with the universe that Don and Gary created, but again, contrast that with Treasure Planet, where even the villains were entertaining and you could feel for them. As soon as Preed double crosses everyone, we're done with him, you know?
Yeah.
And he has no redeeming qualities in the end.
Yeah.
And I don't know. That's just what, another reason. And then again, part of it could have been like extreme pressure from Fox Animation or from the studio executives. You know, whenever you read about these like production hell cases, you wonder, was it the directors? Was it their vision? Or was it all these problems that happened? Yeah. All these problems and interpolations that happen with studio execs. So I don't know. Some people in the chat mentioned poor marketing. It's not like you could find the toys at McDonald's, you know. You got to search pretty hard to find toys from this movie.
Yeah.
And they don't even look like the movies. You know how a lot of collectors and like you go to Comic-Con and stuff and a lot of people make really good like maquettes and action figures and little statuettes of animated films or comic book characters. They need to do that for Titan AE. Because there's some cool designs in this movie, like all the ships and like the dredge and like all the characters. Oh, we've got Animation Nerd Girl in the chat who asked us, what did you guys think of the romance?
I thought it was fine.
I think it was pretty standard for like your space opera, where it's like rough and tough girl protagonist with a rebel with nothing to prove.
Yeah, and if he doesn't like it, he'll leave. Yeah, I felt like it was fine. I felt like they did a good job of like making you feel like, yeah, they missed each other and they'd gone through enough. When you go through enough turmoil together, that's enough to keep you together.
Yeah.
So that's, be grateful for the turmoil. Once again, your biggest strength, your biggest challenges become your biggest opportunities.
Oh, isn't it great when weak things become strong? So anyway, I dig the film. I don't hate it. I don't know what I'm going to rate it for. Rate it, though.
Yeah, rating on this one is going to be interesting.
Let me think. All right, let's go to our chat question. Last chance. I'm going to write it in here in the chat. Last chance for favorite character. It's a little Homestar.
We have a lot of people for Stith.
Oh, we got some Stith. I think Stith was the runaway character for this film.
She did a good job, and she wasn't really
It's not like she had her own song, but she held her own. On the album Stith's song, I am just a space kangaroo. People think I don't have feelings and that I enjoy destruction, but I've got karate skills. And it's mostly true. And that's pretty much it. But wouldn't you want to be a space kangaroo? Space kangaroo, space kangaroo. So this is what a space kangaroo looks like. I want to know. And now I know. Do you keep laser guns in your pouch?
Please say yes.
My heart has kangaroo legs. And I can hop. Anyway, that's a little music for you. You're killing me, folks. But anyway, so we've got a vote for Akima. Could it be that the female characters are more beloved than the male characters in it? No love for Kale. No Kale lovers. No alumni from Kale University here.
I think the male in general, like they all kind of just had that too. They're a little.
They're all kind of the.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what
humanity to them as much as the females kind of like throw you in.
I don't know what gender goon is. We'll just say she identifies as a goon. Her pronouns are Ed, and Eddie. But yeah.
And Bob.
And yeah, not sure what goon is, but goon was really cool too. Really cute. Maybe the closest you can come to a lovable sidekick was goon.
Yeah.
It was kind of like a space turtle.
He did have
thing.
A turtle feel at the head.
Yeah. See you later, goofs. We're into goons now. It just doesn't
have the same ring.
We got Chattleton on the chat who says pretty much Kale is awesome. So we got one vote. Got one vote for Kale, but hey, he voted for Stith two chats earlier. So anyway.
Well, as far as my rating, okay, so I'm gonna give this 3 stars.
3 stars. Okay. That's not bad.
I don't think it's bad. Like it's 2.5 is like, I could either go here or there. I kind of look at it at that. Like the 2.5 for me is an equal, it's not like grade. So it's like A, B, or C. Like C's are like, no, I would never want to see or whatever. For me, it's like 3 is, it's leaning toward I like. So that's where I'd get 3 for that one. I feel like they had a lot of cool things with it, and it was very interesting to watch. So that's where I give it.
All right. I don't know if I should give it a 2.5 or a 3. I'll be optimistic. We'll just do 3 stars out of 5 for Titan A. Thin out of thin. Yeah, 3 out of 5 stars. Yeah, this movie visually had a lot of problems, but that doesn't mean they tried really hard. And I think it's really cool that they at least attempted and did a pretty good attempt at the space opera, the grungy dystopian, mm-hmm. Blade Runner style. If you enjoyed Blade Runner, you would really enjoy this one, because this is very much the same, except there's no cyborgs. But anyway.
And it's lesser for it.
Yeah. But anyway, that's pretty much it. I did not hate the film. It's still one of my, whenever someone mentions it, I'm always like, awesome! Just because I like sci-fi and aliens and stuff.
Yeah, I have all around positive feelings for it.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to move on to our fun, fantastic voicemails.
Oh, how many do we have?
We have 2.
Okay.
We have one. The first one is from Sinjin.
Ooh, Sinjin.
Hey, guys. Super excited to hear you're reviewing Titan AE for the podcast. And I just wanted to share a few thoughts that I have about the movie. First off, I love the concept. It's not necessarily entirely original when you compare it to things like Battlestar Galactica, but I think the spins they give it make it feel really fresh all the same. And the space adventure itself is a lot of fun. It's obvious that Joss Whedon took a pass at the screenplay. It's got, between the dialogue and the action, it's got flashes of Firefly, which is really cool.
Oh yeah,
and
Firefly.
Animation-wise, obviously it's a John Bluth film, so that part of it looks great, but the 3D that they incorporate into the 2D, I think blends really well and holds up today, which is an achievement for sure. The negatives that I have are pretty nitpicky, but I wish that there was some more character development between the other members of the crew, like Preed and Stith and Goon. And the back of Akima's head always kind of bothered me, a little disproportionate, but whatever, it's okay. It's still a great movie. Can't wait to hear you guys' thoughts, and keep up the good work. You guys rock.
No, you rock, Sinjin. I enjoyed it. Yeah, okay, first of all, thank you for your voicemail. I agree, I haven't watched too much Firefly in my life. I saw Serenity before I saw Firefly, which I know is a capital offense. I know. I have not watched that much Firefly, but yeah, it definitely has that kind of utilitarian, clunky cyberpunk vibe to it. Very good comparison.
All right, next one is from MJ.
MJ!
Hello, fellow Rotoscopers. It's MJ here, and what a really great pick, Titan AE. So I think it's a really special, that word again, underrated movie. I'm not going to gush over it, even though I want to, but there's 2 things I have to mention. The first one being the soundtrack, just the songs, like Over My Head and Cosmic Castaway, are really good songs to blast in the car.
Yes.
Soundtrack in a while, but when I heard doing this, I blasted the album again, and it still sounds really good. It sounds very like early noughties.
Respect.
But yeah, I still love it. And the other thing, how great is that with this plot idea of humans being the lowest of the low now? I think that's a wonderful metaphor for minorities and things that go on today. So I thought that was a very good plot point that you could carry a whole movie on, which they pretty much did. Thanks, guys. Love you all.
That's a really good point about like the metaphor with like humans dwindling. It's like, it is pretty crazy, because it's like, we never do enough films where like the world did end, but some humans are left, and this is how they're dealing with it. And we're outcasts now. We're the minority. We're not the center of our universe anymore. And I think that's a really interesting metaphor and one of the coolest parts of this film.
Thank you so much for calling in, you guys. You guys make the podcast what it is. It's been great. I've enjoyed this conversation for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Is that it for voicemails?
Yeah, that's it.
Only 2 voicemails.
Only 2. Definitely need to have a lot more for next time. We have I hope everybody's going to go off and see. Our next episode is going to be Angry Birds, the movie. So definitely go ahead and
get ready, folks. Strap yourselves in.
Support animation and go and see it, and then join in on the conversation. Give us your thoughts. Make sure to let us know what you think. Good, bad, ugly, whatever you like. I mean, let us know. We definitely enjoy hearing your guys' inputs. If you have any questions or if you want to make comments on this episode you can find at rotoscopers.com/123.
Wow.
I know.
123 episodes. Holy cow.
It's so old. It's
amazing. Can I just say something? We would not be here where we are doing the video broadcasts and having like really good equipment and stuff like that without our patrons. They have really stepped up and helped us like make all this possible, and the podcast will only grow with the more Patreon subscribers we have. And so to learn more, you can go to rotoscopers.com/patron to find out how you too can benefit from the perks of being a part of the Roto Nation. Support the show
for sure. And then also I just wanted to also put out that Clay Cadis was the director of Angry Birds movie. He was one of our biggest inspirations for starting this podcast. So once again, Woo-hoo! We are going to be very excited about reviewing this movie. So also you got to make sure if you want to leave comments on rotoscopers.com/123, make sure to leave comments because we are always in there. We always check those comments. We read them. We love them. We comment. We back.
Yeah, I am so insecure. I am constantly looking to see what people think of me on the internet. So it's true. It's true. Mason's very insecure. It's true. We're putting him through therapy, actually. But, yeah. But anyway, we love sifting through y'all's comments, and we love getting feedback for the show. It helps make us better. It helps make the show better. So thank you for all of your feedback and for all your being engaging on the show, basically.
Mason does rule. Alexander in the chat is saying that for him. So yay.
Oh, yay me.
If you are going to be tweeting about this episode, make sure to use the hashtag AnimAddicts or AnimAddicts123. Hey.
Hey, 123. That's easy. 123.
And then once again, voicemails. If you want to send us your voicemails, you got to go to rotoscopers.com/voicemails. And you can also dial in at, United States, so +1, 406-646-6575.
Yeah. So I think we deserve another round of I'm in over my head. Come on.
Please do. Give it.
All right. It's loading, man. There we go. All right, it's peaking out.
Oh my gosh, we really appreciate all those people who have been giving us any type of reviews on iTunes. I've been going through those, right. And I've been like, oh, you guys are so great. Definitely, it does help every time that you give a rating on iTunes. So make sure to keep those coming. Social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr. Find us everywhere. Find Mason on all of his places. Mason, who's pretty active on Twitter, as well as Mason's new portfolio, if you want to see what he's got going on. And then I've been pretty active on Snapchat lately. You can check me out, Chelsea M. Robson, on Snapchat. I was too late to get the Chelsea Robson face palm. But everything else, you can just find me on Chelsea Robson. So next episode, once again, Angry Birds. And Morgan will probably be with us. So,
hopefully.
Hey. All right. Until next time.
We are the Rotoscopers.